you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, you.
Plastics.
I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Dr. E. Michael Jones back on the show. Dr. Jones, of course, is the editor of Culture Wars magazine and author of several books, including The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History, The Slaughter of Cities, Barren Metal, A History of Capitalism as the Conflict Between Labor and Usury, and the most recent, The Broken Pump in Tanzania, Julius Nyerere, and the Collapse of Development Economics. And, of course, you have a you're still working on the latest book, right? On Logos?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that's, what is that, due out around Christmas time?
If I work real hard.
Okay.
I don't have a definite date, but I'm definitely halfway through.
Oh, so you're still working on the manuscript?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that. I thought you were further along with it. Okay. Well, we'll wait for that. And, of course, Culture Wars magazine, culturewars.com. You can go there and subscribe to the magazine. Also, get his books there. First of all, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine.
Great.
Doing fine.
I brought you back to talk about an article that you wrote for Culture Wars magazine in September. It was called Cardinal McCarrick and the Homo Lobby. It's about this scandal, this clerical abuse scandal that's going on in the Catholic Church. And you have a certain take on it, which I think our listeners would profit from listening to. So, Cardinal McCarrick and the Homo Lobby. Let's get into this issue. What's going on here within the Catholic Church, and what's really going on behind the scenes here?
Well, what we saw over the past couple months was a huge explosion in the Catholic Church. The McCarrick story was the beginning of it. Cardinal McCarrick had reached the highest level you can reach in the Catholic Church without becoming Pope. He was de facto the leader of the American church. He reached the highest level there. And then during the course of the summer, it came out that he was a homosexual. Now, the story didn't come out that way. It came out that he was a pedophile. And the first, the accounts were all in that direction. In the New York Times, the story, you know, the journalistic practice is to start with some incident. And the incident was an altar boy. Well, the older boy may have been an older boy, but he was beyond the age of puberty, and homosexuals like young people, so they portrayed it as pedophilia. If you read the story, what you realized was it was not pedophilia. That wasn't the story at all. That he may have had sex with an older boy, but that was the exception and not the rule. The rule was very simple. He had a beach house in New Jersey. The beach house had five beds, and he invariably invited six seminarians to the beach house. So one of them had the dubious pleasure of sleeping with this guy. This was the modus operandi, and that's not pedophilia. So what broke out here was a huge battle over a definition of terms. What are we talking about? What are we talking about? And Russ Dutat wrote an article in the New York Times, an opinion piece, saying why journalists were reluctant to portray this as a homosexual issue. Well, by now it should be obvious, right? First of all, is there something wrong with homosexuality? Or is it the noblest thing that a human being can be now? Is sodomy the most virtuous behavior anyone can have? Well, if you read the New York Times, the answer to that question is yes. So if we take that a step further, what's wrong with Father Cardinal McCarrick sleeping with seminarians? What's wrong with that? Well, the answer, according to the New York Times, is nothing. Nothing. They were all adults. It was consenting sex among adults. What's the problem here? And that's part of the crisis that happened then. That's why, in many ways, it took so long for this to make the news. Okay, it had to happen to something had to happen to Harvey Weinstein. This kind of eruption of disgust that we witnessed in the late last year, after November, almost a year ago, beginning almost a year ago. McCarrick was part of that, part of the fallout from that thing. So we have the battle right now. Okay, is it pedophilia or is it homosexuality? Well, there are very powerful forces in this society that want to portray this as pedophilia. First group, Jewish lawyers. They make out like bandits when it's pedophilia. Most recent cases, Brooklyn, where a Jewish lawyer just took in the case. They settled for $24 million. I'm sure he got a third off the top of that. Okay, so there's a whole legal profession that's interested in portraying it as pedophilia. Secondly, you have a fifth column within the Catholic Church. And let me be very clear about, I'm going to designate this fifth column. It's the Jesuits. Okay, now, I don't mean that it's only the Jesuits. It's not all Jesuits, but it's the Jesuits. Okay, let's get as specific as we can here. The Jesuits are controlled by a homosexual cabal. That doesn't mean that every Jesuit is a homosexual. It means that every Jesuit has to go along with this agenda, or else you're not a Jesuit. I know Jesuits who do not go along, and they are persecuted. And I don't want to, I could name their names right now, but I'm not going to, because I don't want to make their life any more difficult than it is. But I know from years of experience that you get nowhere in the Jesuits if you were to oppose homosexuality. The other issue here is Father James Martin. Is he a homosexual? Well, he's not going to tell us. But he's certainly a promoter of homosexuality, and he promotes it with impunity in the order. Now, homosexuality, in case you forgot, is a sin that cries to heaven for vengeance. It's a horrible sin, but it is now being promoted openly by James Martin, who's the second most famous Jesuit in the world as of this moment, I think. Okay? And we can get to the most famous Jesuit in a minute. So anyway, this is what happened with the McCarrick case. Now, there was a bishop living in Italy who was nuncio. And he was nuncio, which means he took a vow of secrecy. We don't want diplomats telling everybody what they hear, because that's the end of diplomacy. It means no one will be honest with you if they know you're going to go blab it to the press. So this was a man who was wrestling with this and finally decided he had had enough. The McCarrick issue sort of sent him over the edge. And this was Carlo Maria Vigano. And he wrote a letter around in the aftermath, maybe a few weeks after the McCarrick case, in which he said, yeah, I'm familiar with it. I was involved in it. McCarrick, we knew about McCarrick. We, meaning the diplomats, Rome. And Benedict, Pope Benedict, did something about it. He censured McCarrick. He was not allowed to do X, Y, and Z here in public. He was basically told to live a life of prayer and penance in repentance for his sins, the sin that cries to heaven for vengeance, which everybody knew he was guilty of. Well, McCarrick apparently had been hardened by a life of unspeakable sin, and was like water off a duck's back. And so he bided his time, and apparently we get a new pope, Benedict resigns, and now we have the Argentinian Italian Bergoglio, who takes the name of Francis, and he becomes pope. And according to Vigano's testimony, the sanctions were immediately lifted. And Vigano said in a first-person account at a meeting of the bishops that McCarrick came up to him and said, hey, I've been cleared. I'm going to China. Well, Vigano is appalled by this. I mean, what is going on here? What is going on, I think, is that McCarrick wasn't alone. He was the head of the homosexual mafia. That's one way of describing it. But he was also a member of another group, which is known as the St. Gallen Group, named after the diocese in Switzerland, where the bishop would invite people who had been out in the cold for 35 years. We're talking about the people who didn't agree with the sexual agenda of Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict, his successor, both of one mind, that one of the main issues that the church had to confront was the erosion of sexual morality among the clergy, among people in general, but certainly among the clergy. If the Pope had given anything less than the firm stance that Pope John Paul II gave, we would be in even deeper trouble than we are right now. So this group, the St. Gallen group, was licking its wounds out in the cold. And now they chose Pope Francis as their man. He came in second in the conclave that elected Ratzinger. And everybody, once that happens, they thought they had a man here, and they decided to go to him and support him in the next conclave. And lo and behold, he became Pope. And lo and behold, he lifted the sanctions on a member of this group. Now, this is what caused Vigano to blow a fuse. What you have here is a man who is acting not like a pope, but as some type of politician who is rewarding the people and protecting the people in his faction against reprisals for what is obviously serious behavior. The Pope was blindsided by the letter. He was on an airplane. I don't know whether you know this, but up to this time, the Swiss guards have been armed with tranquilizer guns. It was a new policy after Pope Francis came in, and their job was to shoot the Pope anytime he got onto an airplane. It finally worked, okay? The Pope was asked about the Vigano letter, and he said, I'm not going to say anything. Now, this is a man who said, you could talk. I mean, he was talking up. He would shoot his mouth off at the drop of a hat, and now suddenly he's not going to say anything. It didn't look good, okay? And subsequently, there's been a lot of conflict back and forth about, did Francis know? Did Francis know? The implication of the Vigano letter is, yes, he clearly knew, because McCarrick told him that he knew. McCarrick told him that he had been rehabilitated. Well, that means that Francis knew. Francis has denied that, and then it's been muddied back and forth. But I think that the crucial issue here is that it's no longer cranks like E. Michael Jones from Indiana who are saying that we have a homosexual lobby is running the church. I said that before. I wrote that before the Vigano letter came out. And now I'm sure Vigano read my article, and here he is substantiating what I said. So now it's a much bigger issue now, because now you have the consummate insider, the man who really didn't want to say this in public and is violating, in a sense, a vow that he took. because of some extraordinary circumstance, saying, yes, it's a homosexual cabal. It's taken over the church in the sense, what do I mean by that? In the sense that it had power to simply block things from happening. And I think this is in many ways why Benedict resigned. He realized he would say something and it never got carried out. Or the information would go to people under him and it never made it to the Pope. And he just got tired of it and he left. He quit, walked out. Whether that's the right or the wrong decision is not for me to say. I think personally what the Pope should have done is reorganize the Inquisition and burn some people at the stake. Now, maybe people think that's inhumane, okay? Maybe it should be a firing squad. I'm open to all kinds of suggestions. If it's a firing squad, we could offer the guy a blindfold and a cigarette. I'm open to suggesting here. I'm not narrow-minded when it comes to this, you know?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The point here is that whatever he did with McCarrick did not work. It did not work. Whereas if you had taken McCarrick out and shot him with a firing squad, it would have spread terror throughout the entire homosexual network. And that might, who knows? It might have accomplished something, maybe not. But what happened here is that a man who had been clearly caught with his pants down in every sense of the word was let off, okay, absolved. And this sent a clear message that from now on, the guy at the top is going to look the other way when it comes to homosexuality. Well, that's a catastrophe for the church. And that's the catastrophe that we're living through right now.
And, of course, we have the current Pope, when asked directly about this issue, said, "Who am I to judge?" Correct?
Yes. Remember that? It's probably the most famous utterance of the entire papacy. And it came back to bite him, didn't it?
Yes, a couple times, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the problem right now.
Now, with this, of course, what's being revealed here is, of course, this didn't just happen in the past 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. Of course, when McCarrick was raised to the level of cardinal, it was probably known that he had this problem to begin with. And you and I have both talked about this issue in our past talks, when we talked about the Cincinnati Ballet, Meyer Lansky took over the Cincinnati Ballet, won Joseph Bernardine, right?
Right.
And,
right.
And he seems to be part of this, Rite of Sodomy? Is it Randy England? Randy Engel. Yeah. And she talks about a homosexual collective, I guess you could call it gay mafia or whatever. Going back several decades, we have the revelations of Bella Dodd in the 1940s. I think she was converted by Fulton Sheen, right? If I have that correct.
Yeah. I know her story about communist infiltration in the church. I've never been able to trace it beyond Bella Dodd. It just hangs there in midair.
Yeah.
And tried and can't find anything like it.
But, you know, obviously that's the Cold War, and perhaps that's how that dialectic was at that time. But nevertheless, the forces behind that dialectic were working to infiltrate the church. I mean, you've talked about Wilhelm Reich, his strategy of corrupting.
One of the biggest problems here is identifying the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this when I did the Slaughter of Cities. I talked to a guy in Chicago, a cop, who was on the Red Squad. Oh, great. You're on the Red Squad. Why don't you have a Quaker squad? Quakers were destroying your city and you didn't even know who was doing it.
Yes.
What about the Quaker squad?
Yeah.
Now I've got a review coming out of a book called House of Putin, House of Trump. Okay. And it's very clear. This guy is a hack. He's writing for the deep state, but it's a big New York publishing firm with lots of editors. And he says, Donald Trump is Putin's man in the White House. Well, that's preposterous. I'm sorry, but that's preposterous. This is the framework for the Russiagate investigation. You can say it, they're trying to find something on it. So, okay, I'll read your book. Well, it turns out that he's talking about, it began in 72 with the Jackson-Vanik Amendment, which allowed the migration of Jews from the Soviet Union. Wait a minute. Guess where they went? 600,000 Jews left the Soviet Union. 40,000 of them ended up in Brighton Beach, where they're known as Russians. And these people saved Donald Trump. That's true. They did. They did. But they're not Russians. They're Jews. And the point here is that the fact this misdirection was deliberately confected by the ADL. Remember in our conversation about Meyer Lansky and Modalitz, this was a money laundering operation for the Jews run by the ADL. The ADL was getting big donations from people like Modalitz, and in exchange for that, they gave Modalitz, a criminal, Torches of Liberty Award, I believe it's called, in 1984. Okay, this meant that Modalitz was legit, and it also meant if you questioned his legitimacy, you were now an anti-Semite. This is what was going on here with the whole Brooklyn, with the Brighton Beach operation. Okay, what you had here was huge amounts of money being laundered from the Soviet Union by Russian Jews in places like Brighton Beach, and they'd show up and they'd buy condominiums with cash in Trump Towers. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you're allowed to do that. He's allowed to sell condominiums. But let's talk about what's going on here. It was the Jews who were doing this, and to say the Russians influenced the last election is preposterous, but to say the Jews influenced the last election, but wait a minute, that's obvious, isn't it? IPAC does it every single election here. Benjamin Netanyahu got to come over here, okay, and stand before the Congress, even though Obama didn't want him to be there, but he didn't care because he has so much power with the Congress that he can come whenever he wants. Well, they're the ones who were influencing the election. But wait a minute, I guess we can't say that because so what you're seeing here is a complete failure to identify the enemy. Mm-hmm. Who is the enemy here? You know, and we have a deliberate obfuscation of what's going on. So to get back to the church crisis, yeah, I wrote an article on Bernadine. There were plenty of people who were making claims. I talked to the woman who's, I don't know whether you remember Malachi Martin's book, Windswept House.
Yes, I know of it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it begins a novel. Okay. It begins with a woman being violated at a black mass with a crucifix. Mm-hmm. Okay. I talked to that woman. I talked to her before Malachi Martin did. I talked to her when I was doing the research for the Bernadine article. For some reason, she knew I was doing it. She called me up and she told me that story. That man in that novel, well, that was Cardinal Bernadine, she said to me. Okay? I said, well, where did it happen? Well, at that point, it got one. I couldn't get any answers to these questions. So I didn't touch it.
Yeah.
I didn't use it. I wrote the article on Bernadine. I did not mention her story at all because she wasn't credible. Malachi Martin, I think, in a sense, proved that she wasn't credible by turning it into a novel. That's the only thing you could do at this point, okay? But there were people who accused Bernadine of being a homosexual, and one of them was Andrew Greeley. I mean, he's credible, isn't he? He wrote all kinds of books. He's dead now. They're all dead now.
He was in Chicago, right?
Right, he was in Chicago, yeah. And he was a big promoter of Bernadine, tried to get him elected Pope in 1978. And that blew up in his face, and it caused all kinds of embarrassment all around. And then after the embarrassment, Bernadine was ready to move on Greeley, and that's when Greeley wrote the longest blackmail note in history. It was called A Cardinal Sins, and it was a novel. And in the novel, basically, Greeley said, if you do anything to me, I will reveal that you are a homosexual. That was basically the transaction with Bernadine. Bernadine was head of the Catholic Church in America at that point, before McCarrick. He was the guy who ran the Catholic Church. And I don't, you know, the gay men's chorus of Chicago sang at his funeral. I mean, does that mean anything? I don't know. He was a man who was surrounded by ambivalence and ambiguity. You just had that sense when you met him in person, which I did in Rome. So it never came to something public like Rembrandt Weekly.
Yeah, in Milwaukee. Yeah, the Milwaukee.
He was exposed as homosexual because he was playing blackmail to one of his boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what you have here is we have to identify the problem correctly, and the problem started when Eugene Kennedy, who was a Marinal priest at the time, got the bishop's permission to do a survey of the Catholic priesthood. And the survey, the principle behind this whole survey was the psychology of Erik Erikson, who was, doesn't sound Jewish, does it? But he was a Jew. His name was Erik Samuelson for a while. He was an illegitimate child. He knew his father was a Dane and not a Jew, so he picked Erik Erikson. He sounds like somebody shows up with a boat with and wears a helmet with horns sticking out of it.
Yes.
But it was classic Jewish psychology in that it was a cover for moral subversion. So basically, there are six stages to moral development. The fourth stage is sexual activity. If you don't engage in sexual activity, you can never become mature. Well, wait a minute. Stop. We got a group of people here who take a vow of celibacy, which means now, according to Erik Erikson and Eugene Kennedy, they will never become mature. Well, this had a devastating effect on the morale of the Catholic priesthood in the United States. Because who wants to be immature for the rest of your life, especially when the alternative is so enticing? You know, oh, you mean I do that and I become mature? Sure, sign me up. And so what happened is a lot of people, beginning with Eugene Kennedy, decided to act on their desires. He was a Marinal priest when he began, and he was married by the time it ended, the survey, when the book came out.
Yeah.
And many priests followed his example. Most people are heterosexual. Okay, and heterosexuals cannot marry in the Catholic Church and stay in good standing, so they have to leave. So you had an exodus of heterosexuals, which only concentrated the incidence of homosexuality within the Church, and this was the beginning of what finally culminated in the McCarrick scandal.
Now, yeah, and they're using psychology, which is sort of a black op, because that sort of psychology is based on the I guess it's sort of Freudian, where sort of inhibition and morality is sort of seen as a neurosis, and the only way you cure yourself is relieve yourself of the guilt by just indulging your passions. Correct? I mean, that's
right. That's clearly the psychology of Wilhelm Reich. Absolutely clear, no question about it. And Freud may have demurred and talked about civilization and repression and blah blah blah, but that was the message in private when he had Horace Frink on the couch. He told him to have sex with your patient. Dump your wife, have sex with your patient, she's rich, and then make a big contribution to the psychoanalytic society.
Yes. You had this, there seems to be a problem that seems to be systemic in the church. It's also historical, because I've run across research regarding questions regarding, you know, figures like Cardinal Spellman in the 60s being compromised in these things. And you can see the sort of the intelligence value in this is compromising a prince of the church, that way you can sort of neutralize the church, keep it from opposing any particular gender, you know, if you're compromised.
What we have now is de facto a fifth column within the Catholic mm-hmm. Church, the homosexual mafia, and the shorthand for the homosexual mafia is the Jesuits. They are the classic example of a fifth column. Have you read America magazine lately? There's nothing that the great Satan does that America doesn't have something positive to say about.
Mm-hmm.
You name usury, you know, we'll get those guys in. It's like the deep state at prayer.
So
it's America magazine. It's the deep state at prayer.
Well, it's as if what they want to do is infiltrate the church, undermine its credibility, so it does the bidding of, I think what you refer to, I think it's called, the regime, sort of, the regime. And
A supporting. And so this is how they basically neutralize the Catholic Church in the United States. And now it looks as if it spread to the entire world, because now it looks as if the Pope is part of this cabal. Whether you call it the St. Gallen group or the homosexual mafia, it's a group of people who are not happy with traditional Catholic teaching on sexuality and would like to get the heat off their back by let's make as many compromises as we can in a sophisticated way. The Ford Dubia that came out of, remind me of the name of that encyclical. The one on marriage, the name escapes me at this moment. Anyway, the Cardinals, Cardinal Burke led a group of people who said, look, if you're divorced and remarried, that's adultery. And if it's adultery, you cannot receive communion. And the group of people that we're talking about as the homosexual cabal or the Zonkalan group or whatever are trying to psychologize this thing by saying, well, we don't know this, the inner forum. We don't know the state of mind. Well, you don't have to know the state of mind. It's an objective fact. If you're sleeping with someone who's not your wife, it's adultery, period. And if it's adultery, you're in grave sin and you can't approach the communion rail. That simple. That's all it is. And now they're trying to undermine this in a way that is unseemly for the Catholic Church. The Catholic, the people who are up to their eyeballs in this are the Germans. Much as I love Germany, I have to admit that the church there is in a state of disarray. Okay, largely because of the sexual revolution.
Yeah.
Which I experienced firsthand. Wait, that sounds ambiguous. I watched it happen. When I was there in the 70s as a member of a rock band, I was a teacher and a member of a rock band, and I watched what was happening with the students there at this time, a horrendous undermining of sexual morality, which has had consequences to this day.
Yeah, low birth rates and, depopulation, low morale. These things.
Right.
Yeah.
So the best thing that happened to Germany in this regard is the Muslim immigration. So last time I was in Munich 10 years ago, time before last, if you go into the English garden during a hot summer day, there are all these German ladies lying around naked. It's not just ladies, it's men too. It's like a homosexual pickup place. But people lying naked in the English garden. Nobody's lying around naked in the English garden anymore. That era is over. And I think it has to do with Muslim immigration and the fact that those people have a different reaction, let's say.
Could this be the cunning of reason at play here?
I think it's the cunning of reason. You missed that for them. So I'm there. So there's a change going on in the German mind, and I had an experience. I was grateful for the experience to give that talk last week. A real meeting of the minds. I had to give the talk in German because they would not. That's another good sign. They won't allow you to speak in English anymore. Thank God. I have to suffer through. Anyway, thank God that we had this meeting of the minds. Okay, there's still a lag though. When I'm taking the subway to, I had to get through the subway system in Munich. And there's a picture, okay? Team Deutschland, okay? And it's an ad for Toyota. And there's this gorgeous German woman that we've all come to know and love. And standing next to her is a midget. What are you trying to tell us here? German men are midgets. And you expect them to buy Toyotas on top of that. This is a hangover. I think the German people are starting to awake. And I think that soon there will be a course correction, certainly in Bavaria, which is where I was spending my time.
That's the more conservative Catholic area, yeah.
It's the Catholic area.
Yeah.
Berlin is a hopeless case because it's Prussia, and Berlin is like the gay capital of Europe. Visit Am aber sexy.
Yes, yes.
It's the slogan of Klaus Wowereit, who was mayor, who was ahead of his time. We now have a gay mayor in South Bend who is a pale imitation of Klaus Wowereit.
Yeah, Berlin is a South Bend sister city, right?
not exactly, but yes. In spirit, if not in the law.
Because they say the same things, right? The jobs are gone, go be gay.
Exactly. This is the whole point. Let's get it out on the table here. The reason we're promoting homosexuality is to distract you from the fact that you can't earn a living with that job you have. You've got crappy wages. So don't complain about your wages, go to the gay disco and dance away your troubles. That's the whole story in a nutshell. We've talked about it before on your program.
Yes.
And the fact, so to bring it back to this case, the Catholic Church is complicit in this, both in Germany and in the United States. And I'm trying to come to some type of grips, understanding of why that happened. I've already told you the story of why I think it happened in the United States. We're talking about Americanism. Americanism. This is when Bernardine was the ruler of the church in America. They had the Synod on the Laity in the 80s, and Brian Hare, his henchman, who is now at the faculty at the Divinity School at Harvard, came and gave a talk, a secret conference at St. Mary's College, my former employer, in which he said the Catholic Church had to learn from America when it came to sexual issues. What are you talking about? And he came.
We got it all figured out, huh?
yeah, look around. And the instance he gave was feminism. This man clearly felt that feminism was a superior moral position to anything that you could find in the Catholic Church. This is sexual Americanism. And it was the beginning. That's 30 years ago now. And McCarrick is the evil fruit that grew out of this corrupt soil.
Mm-hmm. Interesting enough, I learned that he apparently his father died when he was a little boy, right?
Was that McCarrick?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I read that someone told me his biography.
The explanation is father deprivation for homosexuality.
But nevertheless, homosexuals, the avant-garde of the sexual revolution, understood, but they are a minority, you know, 1-2% of the population, yet they're so influential. Everything, laws being bent to conform to their lifestyle and their acceptance and their happiness. But there's a quote in the article that you provide, I'll quote from it, from Professor Joseph Augustine, he's a Jesuit, who said, the problem, in my opinion, is not in them, but in our reaction to them. How do we, ordinary priests and superiors, react to their behavior? Do we yield to fear, step back, call for silence, pretend the problem does not exist? Or do we face the problem, are explicit about it, take away their influential positions, remove them from their offices? They should not work in seminaries or hold in important positions. If the homosexual lobby exists and has anything to say in the structures of the church, is because we give in, withdraw, pretend, and so on. The Holy See has given us a clear sign, a direction on how such problems should be solved. Concealing the behavior of dishonest persons, which will sooner or later be exposed anyway, destroys the authority of the church.
Right. That's Father Oko's contribution, and he wrote that when Ratzinger was Pope. Mm-hmm. All of that has changed now. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Let me give an example of what I see in that. I told you the story of McCarrick's beach house. Okay. There was one seminarian who was lucky enough to hop in bed with Cardinal McCarrick. Okay. What about those other five guys? Think about them for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they went along with it.
Yep.
I mean, just think how that compromised their understanding of the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
Think how what lessons that taught them. Not that they are homosexuals, they're probably not homosexuals, but they had to go along with homosexuality if they wanted to be a priest. This is a horrendous example of scandal and bad example. And it has contaminated the entire church in America. We have a priesthood that's afraid to speak out because they feel that they've been compromised. They have been compromised by their complicity, and they don't know how to get out of it. The church is struggling. How do you get out of this thing? And now, especially, how do you get out of it when the leader, it looks as if he's complicit with the cabal that's the problem? That's the horrible situation we're in right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And because once the priests lose their credibility, once the shepherd loses credit, the flock will just go away. And then we see that happening.
Where you see men being punished. For example, in Chicago, I don't know if you saw that story, but there was a priest there who burned the gay flag.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was immediately removed. Well, why is that? Was that a mortal sin or a venial sin? This is Cardinal Supich or whatever his name is.
Who was installed by McCarrick? Who was installed
by McCarrick, and who's a stalwart supporter of Pope Francis. Well, what type of message are you sending us here, Your Eminence? That you can be a homosexual and a priest in good standing, but you can't burn the flag, the gay flag, and be a priest in good standing? This is the problem. And here he's trying to explain the situation. You can't explain the situation. You're part of the problem. You're part of the problem. Homosexuality is the problem. It's not pedophilia. All of those, the grand jury, I don't know we talked about this, but the grand jury in Philadelphia spent 5 years, 500 priests, millions of dollars, zero indictments. The grand jury in Harrisburg, another Jew, same amount, 300 priests, blah, 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 one indictment or two indictments, whatever it is. That's not a big number. That's a very small number. Try investigating public school teachers. Try investigating any group. I'll say any group in the United States, and I think you come out with more sexual malfeasance than you find in the Catholic Church. So why is this happening? Well, it's because we're dealing with a Catholic-Jewish battle here. That was clear. Came out clearly in the Kavanaugh hearings. I'm the only one who said it. The only other guy who said it in a kind of a satirical way was Kevin Barrett, who's a Muslim, who probably said it because he's been listening to me rant on his show. But I mean, basically what you're seeing here is another inability to identify the problem correctly. Who these people are at war with Logos, they're at war with the Catholic Church, and all we can do is say, well, they're our elder brothers, and we just wonder why we keep losing every battle in the culture wars. That's another compounding of the situation here.
Well, our big brothers always pick on us, no matter how old we get, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's almost. I think you make the point in the article how this is similar. How you know the Harvey Weinstein thing was a misdirection, sort of this spark for the Me Too movement. How you know it sort of took attention away from perhaps the bigger scandals in Hollywood. You know, no one is investigating Hollywood and pedophilia, which is pedophilia. People like Bryan Singer, Ian McKellen.
Pictures of these. Well, we have testimony of men whose lives were ruined by them and so on and so forth. And nothing seems to happen. Nothing happens. Why isn't why can't Hollywood be sued?
Sue Hollywood. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's like suing the Vatican.
Well, you're suing the church. Why can't you sue Hollywood? There's a lot of money there. Well, it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Pennsylvania grand jury, which is what, one indictment and 300 people charged, and yet they released the report.
But if you can't hand down an indictment, don't release the dossier, because these men have no way of defending themselves.
Yeah.
At least if they go to trial, they can have a trial and defend themselves and prove their innocence. This is proof that this is an attack on the Catholic Church. It is proof. There is no other way to interpret the fact that they've handed out these dossiers of people. They couldn't find the evidence credible to bring down an indictment, yet we're supposed to find it credible? That's ridiculous.
Well, because the meme gets down there, you know, they created what I think you correctly call a moral panic, and a moral panic is often there's something behind it, but then people start to lose, they get sloppy and they don't demand evidence. And, you know, once the story gets out of pedophilia and priests and these things, people accept it as, well, that's truth. That's happening. And so we don't need a trial or any of these things. So anyone can be accused of these things. And there's never any real trial to go through the evidence, and no one's ever either indicted or vindicated in these things. But I think your point is well taken. It's the attempt to bring the church down, not bring down, criminal elements within the church. A good example was, I think, PBS Frontline, when they were covering it was going up in Boston. And I think the show was called, the Boston Globe against the taking on the church. I think it was called the church. as if, you know, this was the, as the institution, this sort of this authoritarian insular institution needed to be opened up and become more democratic and more liberalized. This was the problem. And as if this was church teachings, these things, when I think you've made this point before, the very priests that were caught up in Boston were the priests that were previously praised for their innovative youth outreach.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. And
So what you're seeing is a group of people who are both the fire department and the arsonists.
Yes. They create the culture. It creates this problem. And then
that's right. So if we, to give state the example I've already given, if we go back 30 years, it was a Jewish psychiatrist like Erik Erikson telling you that in order to be mature, you have to engage in sexual activity and giving you a permission slip to go out and engage in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 30 years down the road, the same group of people is now the going to punish you for doing what some Jew told you to do 30 years ago. You know, this is the double game that's being played here. And it's only being played on the Catholic Church.
I think in the article you write, I don't know if this is you or the father, but he says, this putting in the context of the times is, we have to talk about the culture war and the sort of the poisoning of the cultural well that's been done over the past 50, 60 years by these forces that you mentioned. You're right. We should not be particularly surprised or shocked, though, knowing that the clergy is submitted to all the influences of their times, including the worst ones. In the age of fascist ideologies and Marxism, we also had fascist priests and Marxist priests in the church. Now that the extreme leftists promote homo ideology, in turn, we naturally have homo ideologists and sometimes even homoeretic priests in the church.
Yes, that's Father Ockel.
Okay, he wrote that. Okay.
That's from the point of view of Poland during the papacy of Pope Benedict. But on the other hand, I mean, Poland is a place where they have dealt with it more or less successfully. I've told this before, but when my book, Libido Dominandi, Sexual Liberation and Political Control, it was translated into Polish, and we did a book tour. Now, that would never happen in the United States. I guarantee you that will never happen here, okay, because I am persona non grata. It happened there, and the bishops were being pressured to throw me under the bus all night. The first night I got there, one phone call after another, there's going to be a big demonstration in Wrocław, cancel the tour. And the bishops did not do that. The Bishop of Warsaw stood behind me, and as a result, I mean, years later, as I said, I was in Argentina trying to console the people there. One guy's in total despair. And I said, I got an email, like out of the blue, God's hand here, said, basically, between your book and the Polish bishop's statement on gender ideology, you defeated gay marriage in Poland. Nobody takes it seriously anymore. Well, that came at just the right moment that I could share it with this poor guy in Argentina. But the point here is, if we have unity, we're going to win. It's that simple, because nothing can stop the Catholic Church. If it has unity. And that's precisely, so why don't we have unity? Well, because we have a homosexual fifth column in the church, running America Magazine, running the Jesuits, running the way the church acts, because these people have been given permission slips to act on their sexual impulses. And in exchange for that, they're so grateful that they got a permission slip that they'll do whatever the great Satan tells them to do. That's the problem. And it didn't exist in Poland. Where it doesn't exist, where there's unity in terms of idea and action, we win. And there's no gender ideology in Poland now. No gay marriage. Sorry, it's over.
Not only with unity do we win, but if we follow the church's teachings on things like contraception, we have numbers.
Right. There's no point in having numbers if you don't have unity. And we do not have unity. Mm-hmm. I guarantee. And the main reason we do not have unity is because of this homosexual fifth column in the Catholic Church. These people need to be disciplined. If we don't discipline them, we're committing suicide. So what is the response of the bishops? They beat their breasts and they go out of their way to collaborate with their enemies, like opening up the archives for some other Jewish politician, DA, who wants to run for governor. He's going to make more. It's just...
Yeah, wagging their finger at Mother Church, these Jewish politicians, as if, you know, like Alan Dershowitz, you're lecturing the church.
Yeah, there's a classic example. A classic example. Here's some. He's on the Lolita Express. Alan, what are you doing on the Lolita Express? Why were you at Jeffrey Epstein's island if it wasn't to engage in sex with underage females? Why did you go there? For the sun? Yeah, that's what Martha's Vineyard is for. Now he's crying in his beer that people are shunning him in Martha's Vineyard. What a tough life you've had, Alan. I really feel sorry for you.
He's crying at Martha's Vineyard. Oh. You close the article out. I'm going to, in this paragraph, I think sums it up well. Because then after this, I'll get your remarks on the Kavanaugh hearings. You quote, I guess you refer Russ Duhat. Duhat sees Cardinal McCarrick as the Harvey Weinstein of the Catholic Church, creating a Catholic Me Too movement in the church made up of faithful abused by the clergy. What he fails to see is that the attacks on Weinstein resulted in directing the pent-up rage away from homosexuals like Brian Singer and Ian McKellen and focused on the hapless heterosexual scapegoats like Harvey Weinstein. The Jesuits have long been doing something similar for decades. During that time, they have been able to broker a deal with the oligarchs very similar to Michel Foucault's Pact with the Devil, which neutered the left during the 1970s. Michel Foucault's Pact with... Michel Foucault's Pact with the Devil, which neutered the left during the 1970s. Give us unlimited sexual freedom, Foucault said, as proxy leader of the left he was about to betray, and we won't criticize your economic system, as the left has traditionally done. The Jesuit variation on Foucault's Pact with the Devil was every bit as simple. Allow us to act on our homosexual impulses, the Jesuit said, and we will act as a fifth column serving oligarch interest within the church. America Magazine is a classic expression of the Jesuits' pact with the oligarchs. James Martin is one of his executors. In exchange for permission to gratify their perverted desires with impunity, the plurality of homosexuals, which controls the Jesuit order, has been complicit in the attack on the church for going on two decades now. Cardinal McCarrick's untimely demise exposed their double game. There you go. So,
amen, brother. Who said that? Oh, I said that.
Sums it up well, I think. But the you had some interesting to say things on the Kavanaugh hearing. Of course, he was eventually confirmed, and that whole thing with Blasey Ford and the sort of this campaign to bring up dirt from 1983 when he was at a party when he was in high school and these things. So, but you took a certain position on it that was interesting, because there was a certain, I guess, dynamic to it that not many people, even Pappy Cannon, seemed to ignore in his column.
Yeah, Pat, as he had a no holds barred account of half of the story, as we have come to expect from Pat, who I admire as a writer. But basically, it was an attack on Catholics, right, Pat? They attack. Who's they, Pat? Well, it's a Jewish attack on the Catholics. He knew that. He knows that. He's not stupid. Dianne Feinstein had already shown her colors when Amy Barrett came before the investigation, and she told her, "You're not qualified because of your dogma. Your dogma. You're a Catholic. In other words, Catholics are not qualified," says the Jew. Well, Jews don't have dogma. What's there are two Jewish sacraments: abortion and sodomy. Add usury to that, okay? And we're not allowed to say that. We're not allowed to say that it's a Catholic Jewish battle. No wonder we lose all the time. This is ridiculous. This is pure, unadulterated, anti-Catholic bigotry, okay? And it was the Jews who were orchestrating it, and they tried to do everything within their power. They tried to do Clarence Thomas all over again, and it backfired on them, and Kavanaugh got appointed. But let's go back to the story. It's a repeat of what I just said about the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Okay. What was Judge Kavanaugh doing in the 80s? I guess he was watching movies where they portrayed rape as something that's laughable. Okay, who was producing those movies in Hollywood? Is there a group that controls Hollywood? I seem to have heard this somewhere. It's the same group that is contributing. Now, I went to Catholic prep school in Philadelphia 18 years before Judge Kavanaugh, and there was no trace of this. I'm sorry. I wish I could tell you lurid tales, but I can't, because they didn't happen. There was no trace. What happened during this period of time is that the production code got broken when I was a junior in high school. And what you're seeing is 20 years of the corrupting effect that Hollywood had on Catholic youth during this period of time. Okay? It was a meltdown. I think that what she was saying about Catholic life was true. High school, prep school, girls' school, whatever it was, all you have to do is read her yearbook, and you can see that it was one drunken bash after another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the same group of people that corrupted the morals of these teenagers now shows up as senators, and they're condemning him for doing what the Jews told him to do 20 years ago. It's the same story over again. It's like the Eric Erickson story and the clergy. Now it's teenagers and Judge Kavanaugh. Same story.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you have what? They went to go see Porky's and Risky Business and Class and The Graduate and The Heartbreak Kid and all these movies, Animal House and all, you know.
Animal House.
Yeah.
this type of behavior.
Yeah.
And that's a Hollywood product. Hollywood's controlled by Jews. So Jews are the arsonist and they're the fire department. All in one. It's just 30 years apart. That's all.
Yeah, and I think in the talk with Peter, you're talking about, so yeah, just sort of the decline in public morality and the decline of morality in these schools, where it's hard for people to imagine that it wasn't as debased as it was in the early 60s. And of course, it changed in the late 60s and into the 70s. And 20, 25 years makes a difference when a culture is sort of bathed in this stuff and they don't take any responsibility for this.
That's right. Who's in Hollywood is going to take responsibility for the corruption of the morals of that Jesuit prep school in Washington? Nobody. Sorry, nobody. And if we don't hold them accountable, no one's going to hold them accountable. Let's be fair here. This is a Catholic-Jewish battle, and they have things that they have to answer for. And it never comes up.
I'm sure Ruth Bader Ginsburg had a long paper trail of advocating, you know, lowering the consent age down to 12 and doing away with a father and mother in all federal law. She had no preconceived notions or ideologies or worldviews that would affect her jurisprudence, right?
this is all progressive thought. It's
yeah.
not doctrine.
I think she was approved 97-3 or 96-3 or something, and she had this long paper trail of being a feminist advocate, you know, a radical.
But that's not dogma. That's being progressive.
Yeah.
This is I'm glad we have the opportunity to expose this double standard tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is you're doing God's work here by doing this, because the world is suffering under this double standard. We have to get over it.
Did anyone ask Kagan about does she bring the Talmud to does that affect her jurisprudence? I mean, it's like,
is there a Jewish position on abortion? Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, there is. That got imposed on the entire United States of America.
Yeah, actually, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, this is real chutzpah. She had a quote where she was upset, critical of Roe v. Wade, because she said it imposed abortion on the country before a wide public support could be built up for it. As if...
Ruth, honey, it's never going to happen. there was never wide public support for this. It was imposed upon us by judicial tyranny.
Still isn't to this day. I mean, like you said, the moment some state passes some reasonable restriction on, like, late-term abortions, there's some federal judge, you know, going to whack it down in the name of, you know, of Roe v. Wade or something, right? I mean,
yeah. And this is democracy? This is not democracy. This is the antithesis of that. It's judicial tyranny. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the battle was so heated. But I mean, we can't talk about the sides in this battle. Pat Buchanan can't talk about it. And if he can't talk about it, then you know how widespread this taboo is.
Well, I think you've said at one time there was a time when you were fit for polite society. You're no longer fit for polite society.
Yeah, I told the Germans that. I'm not Stubenfähig. Stubenfähig or Salonfähig, as they say now.
you just can't, especially where, you know, where I've seen Pat. Pat Buchanan's waved at me when I'm driving down the street at his house. I've been that close to him. And, you know, you just can't live in this area and have those views and have any semblance of a career or anything like that. So that's, you know, I don't know whether it's he realizes that or just, you know, a lot of these things people have internalized themselves. And, you know, this is the regime you live under, right? I mean,
that's right.
There's certain canonical teachings or we have to follow to be allowed.
Yeah,
to,
yeah. I have to. Polite people don't say this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
You know, so I mean, yeah, you know, they say things like psychologizing radicals, right? Secular humanist, and
that's right. You can look it up in the phone book. It's either under S or R. I'm not sure which.
Kevin Barrett, in that article that you said, it was funny because, you know, it was tongue in cheek, but it was funny citing all the various senators that were grilling Kavanaugh. You know, these things. I mean, if you turn that around, if you had a Jewish appointee and you had four Catholic senators grilling the appointee on her worldviews or his worldviews and his religion, his ideology, imagine, you know, how that would have been portrayed.
Yeah, there's a double standard here, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, but then we should be used to that, shouldn't we?
Yeah, well, it's not, the shelf life has expired for this double standard. I'm announcing it on your show. Okay, from now on, no more double standard.
Oh man, so that's, you know, that's. He got, you know, like I said, the whole Kavanaugh thing, it never got really discussed with some of the other real issues, because you really can't discuss substantive constitutional issues with these appointees anymore, because if the appointee has written anything of any substance, especially if he's deemed a conservative, or he gets what they call borked, right?
That's right.
So you have to have these little controversies kind of created to create the drama, you know.
It had uncanny similarities to the grand jury in Harrisburg in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. In other words, 35 years ago, something happened, and it never came out 35 years ago. It was never checked. It was so on and so forth. It's just an unsubstantiated rumor that the FBI would not take seriously. They vetted the guy seven times, and yet because the Jews control the media, they were allowed to turn it into an issue that basically paralyzed the country for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Simple. It's that simple.
You had the vast resources of the Federal Bureau of Investigation trying to find out what happened at a high school party that may or may not have occurred in the Maryland suburbs.
They won't, unless there's a police record, they can't investigate it. And there's no police record. So it doesn't matter. The third lady who came forward, apparently someone did do research, and she was a disaster. She was engaging in seductive sexual behavior where she worked, and got two people fired because they fell for her thing. She was and she was supposed to be credible. Fortunately, she wasn't as exposed. I mean, fortunately for her, she wasn't exposed to the scrutiny. But again, what's the scrutiny? Where's the scrutiny? I kept hearing negative things from my sources. It never showed up in Google or Yahoo or any of these news aggregators. It was all just, you know, horrible things about Kavanaugh.
Oh, yeah. The fact that her boyfriend, former boyfriend, contradicted her claims of being afraid to fly. She apparently used committed credit card fraud and these things. And, you just didn't hear any of this stuff. It undermined her credibility. She also lied about coaching someone taking a lie detector test or something, and that again,
yeah,
and it's like it didn't happen apparently because CNN wasn't talking about it, or MSNBC wasn't talking about it, or wasn't in the New York Times or Washington Post and these things.
No, none of they all pretext of journalistic objectivity was thrown to the winds, and there was just this bloodlust to get Kavanaugh defeated. There's something deep going on here, and the deep thing that we're talking about here is abortion. Okay, there are lots of women who have had abortions, and in this situation, you can either repent or you can turn yourself into a slave of the movement, and use that. And these people, feminism is the movement that basically channels guilt into political action, and that's what we saw here. That's what we saw here across the board.
Yeah, this is how, like an actress who's, you know, some actress who sells herself, you know, on screen, and 1 minute she's selling herself as a sexual object, then she's transformed into a raging, you know, feminist. And again, that guilt becomes rage, yeah.
Harvey Weinstein, the Me Too thing.
Yeah.
And I talked about that then. There was this, it was guilt. I mean, like, you know, as I said back then, when I started doing research, it turns out that everyone accused Harvey Weinstein had a sex tape.
Yeah.
This got leaked. Well, why? Wait a minute, honey. Why are you doing this, putting this on the internet or allowing it to go on the internet or doing it in the first place? You're not supposed to film this. It's supposed to be private. So why are you doing this? Well, there's deeper psychological reasons for this.
Yeah.
There's a kind of an attempt to kind of project it away from yourself, you know?
And what's funny thing is this concern about abortion and these things and Kavanaugh, I don't hold much hope out for the Supreme Court to reverse Roe v. Wade ever, because it's, I think abortion is part of the regime's agenda. So whatever is going to happen, they're always going to have a situation where the, you know, rulings are confected or the votes are there to protect it. I mean, the closest we came to was 1992, and then a Catholic judge, right, came out with that ruling in Roe v. Wade. I mean, sorry, in Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Yeah, the mystery.
Yeah, the mystery thing where, central to the meaning of freedom and liberty is to define one's meaning in the universe, and therefore you should be able to kill your unborn child, apparently, which is what I got out of it. So, I don't know, even these appointees, a lot of that is, you know, maybe they're just, the whole judiciary has been so politicized, and so now, people see it as an arena for political debate, as opposed to judges supposed to provide, an objective reading of the fundamental law. But I think you've made the case the Supreme Court's never been anything other than the tool of the oligarchs. So
yes, I was just going to say that. Yeah. That's from John Marshall, Marbury versus Madison. Mm-hmm. It was created to be that.
Mm-hmm.
To keep demos in line.
So we have these theatrical battles you have to put up with, I suppose. So, well, anything else, Dr. Jones?
It's always been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
We call this unprotected intercourse.
Yes. So, look.
Conceptions afterwards.
So you have the Kavanaugh article is coming out in November, right?
There is no Kavanaugh article. I did was a video.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay. So I thought there was a piece coming out of it. Okay. So never mind. So, the video is the hidden grammar behind the Kavanaugh hearings.
Yes.
That you can listen to. And that's with Peter Helen, right?
You better go to Peter Helen's Israel, because I've been censored on my channel.
Oh, really? Are you like, yeah. You mean like you can't?
You can get it if you have the exact URL. But
yeah, I have one of those. Yeah, I got one of those when I did a show on the ADL and B'nai B'rith.
Yeah, well, guess why?
I've learned if you don't put in the title, you misspell something, they miss it.
Yeah.
So yes. I'm not important enough to listen to. It's just the title.
I'm sure there's an office at the ADL that is the E. Michael Jones department, and their job is to monitor me.
Yes.
I never have to send the ADL a second notice that their subscription has expired. They're my most faithful subscribers.
Well, yeah. Well, the origins of the ADL, it goes back to what? The Mary Fagan case.
Right? Leo Frank, yeah.
Yeah, the Leo Frank case. And that's, Chris, that's a sordid history. Read about that. And that gives you an idea of the true mission behind the ADL. So
that's in the Jewish revolutionary spirit.
Yes, it is. That's the first time when I read that, I said, wait a second, I remember this case. I had a completely different understanding of that case until I read your book. So read the books.
Yes. Okay.
So, okay, great. Well, thank you, Doctor. Chris, that's Dr. E. Michael Jones, the editor of Culture Wars, the author of several books, including The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. You can get a subscription to his magazine at culturewars.com and also get the books there as well. And I want to thank you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, Tim.
My pleasure too. And when I post this, I'll send you the link, and I'll wish you a good night.
Thank you.
So long then. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye. So we chat.
how most of our ladies grew up at the country club dances. They learned how to handle the boys. Gently but firmly they learned to say no. There were four more young men who were waiting in the color and the noise. So we changed partners. Always change partners. Time to change partners again. All of the ladies attending the ball are requested to gaze in the faces found on your dance card. Please then remember and follow your list, 'cause the dear things get hurt and the broken hearts may.